You're listening to Live Free, Think Free on 90.1 KPFT Houston, your home for uncensored news and underground music since 2011.
All right. Another episode of Live Free, Think Free. 11 plus years now doing this show, bringing music. If you've got music you think we should be paying attention to, please turn us on to that good music. Send it to us any way you can. Want to thank everybody joining us, joining in the conversation, etc. Speaking of music, that was Jeremy Carswell doing the beginning of Dance All Night. That song's been taken off a little bit from his album 2025. You can find it out there on all platforms. We're always happy to talk about these issues and to talk about solutions as well as art and music. So, yeah, we want you to be involved in as many aspects of this show as possible. We played music from Australia. We played music from around the U.S. So we're always excited when we find others. And some of it sticks with us personally. I know I just heard an album that came out a few months back by Goon. They're a band that sent us a CD that I played live maybe 2 years ago, and they just dropped another one. So, yeah, anyway, I'm here. You can follow our archives on thehoustonfreethinkers.com. Most of the articles and material we get into tonight will be linked up there, so you can follow it further or critique it. And we invite you to join in the discussion as much as possible. And we're glad to be here on KPFT. Still, I guess, how long have we been here? About 7 years, Derek? How are you, man?
I'm doing good, man. Yeah, the show's been on 11 years. I've been working with KPFT probably about that 6-7 years. And, yeah, happy to be here. As Micah said, you can find the archives and the links to all the articles we're about to jump into at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. And I'm looking forward to playing some more music. We're going to try to mix it up, play something different from the archives we've got here in our little DJ here online. But we're thankful to everybody here who's live with us. We're live on Facebook. We're live on Odyssey. We're live on Rockfin. And this, of course, will be posted afterwards on our Spotify channel, on BitChute, on Hive, on theconsciousresistance.com, and thehoustonfreethinkers.com. So you can find that all there. Well, let's go ahead and jump in. Mike, I got a local story. I feel like it's been a little while since we've talked. You know, there's always things going on in a city like the size of Houston. And we're also, some of you may notice, we're trying to broaden the scope of the show. We're based in originally from Houston, but we want to make sure that we're talking about news that is relevant to all of you, even if you don't live in Houston. We think that often there's parallels, you know, and we try to remind you guys of that, like, hey, just because this doesn't say your city, think about how it might apply to your city in terms of similar programs or similar actions by governments, et cetera. But we do want to make sure that we are bringing news relevant to all of you, no matter where you live. Because since the beginning of this show, you remember, Michael, like way back in the day, one of our first fans, if you will, first listeners was this dude, Michael from Australia, like way, like this is like, probably the first or second year.
Back when we were on Local Live.
Yeah, exactly. So we've always been a show that's international based, even though, you know, with a Houston focus as well. So with that said, let's go ahead and get into it. This article is coming, or this sort of look at here that we're going to look at is coming from, it started with me getting this email, and this is one benefit. Here's a tip to anybody who wants to be an investigator, researcher, citizen journalist, etc. Subscribe to the press releases from your local mayor's office, police, different departments. Pretty much sign up for all of it and just check it. There's usually useful information, including the schedules of where they're going to be. So if you ever need to ask them questions, you know exactly where they are. And I got this one about Houston's 5G champion, Mayor Sylvester Turner, who is in his second to last year. Next year will be his final year before he leaves office. And then there's an election coming up for a new mayor in Houston. And as we've told you before over the years, I mean, this guy's worked closely with wireless. He also sits on the board of this Resilient Foundation, which is funded by the Rockefeller Foundation. He has welcomed the president, not Klaus Schwab, but this other president of the World Economic Forum before. So we've seen relationship between the World Economic Forum, who, for those who might not be familiar, are the folks that announced what they call the Great Reset, their words, not ours. Back in June 2020, talking about, they said it's time to reset capitalism and that COVID has shown us we need to reset and remake all the world's systems. Anyways, the mayor's schedule says Monday, 5:30 p.m., he was delivering opening remarks at the World Economics Forum's Global Industrial Clusters Conference in partnership with the Center for Houston Future Reception. And so obviously that caught my eye. It's like, what the heck is this? I've never heard of the World Economic Forum's Global Industrial Clusters Conference, and I've never heard of the Centers for Houston Future Well, I found them and I looked them up. And if you're watching on screen, you can see what I'm checking out. This is just their website, centerforhoustonsfuture.org. And then this is, again, in their press release section under news and media. Houston meeting seeking to accelerate decarbonization, job creation, and competitiveness with industrial clusters. And we'll get into what some of that means, but this is just basically a press release, and this just tells us more about this meeting that Mayor Sylvester Turner was participating in. It said that on October 10th to 12th, which is today, so it concluded today, it's been Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday here in Houston, as part of a World Economic Forum initiative supported by Accenture, which is a company, and the Center for Houston's Future and EPRI, not sure who they are yet, aimed at accelerating industrial decarbonization, creating jobs, and improving competitiveness. The meeting is part of the, quote, Transitioning Industrial Clusters Towards Net Zero initiative, which was launched last year at the UN's COP26 by the forum in collaboration with Accenture and EPRI, that name again. And they say that this is about speeding decarbonization of, quote, hard-to-abate industrial sectors with increasing industrial competitiveness, creating green jobs through opportunities at nearby facilities, as nearby facilities share infrastructure and drive synergy, blah, blah. At this event, participants will discuss hydrogen, carbon capture and storage, industrial electrification, systematic efficiency, and circularity. The forum selected Houston after the Center for Houston's Future joined the initiative in May. And so all told, there are apparently 10 industrial clusters from the US, UK, Australia, Spain, Belgium, and the Netherlands that are part of this effort. And I guess that they consider these industrial clusters to be areas that are obviously heavily industrialized and dealing with pollution and different things and maybe producing what they claim is a dangerous amount of carbon. And so, yeah, the press release goes on from there. But that was kind of what I found. And I have some more, Micah, but let's just stop there for a moment. I mean, are you familiar? I'm sure you've come across, most people have been hearing this language, the net zero decarbonization. Like, this is not just about, you know, this is definitely about watching people's carbon. And this one's focused on industrial areas. But that idea of net zero, they literally think they're going to get carbon down to zero.
Yeah, I don't know. Kind of sounds like the zero COVID, right? You know, like the kind of totalitarian view on it. I mean, I'm not trying to say that we shouldn't look at carbon emissions and think about them like we should any other aspect of human interaction. But I do think that it's a little bit much. I mean, aren't we carbon? I mean, so what, are we not going to have fires in our fireplaces anymore? Are we not going to have barbecues? I don't know. I mean, net zero, that's such an absolute thing. I guess you're going to have to buy carbon credits or something, right? And
exactly.
We've seen where some companies, you know, appear to be green by buying these carbon credits from companies that overproduce in a way that allows them to have excessive carbon credits. So we see them already gaming that system. I know we talked about that. Maybe you remember a couple of perhaps months back at this point. I don't remember exactly where that was. I think it might have been related to some Tesla dealings. But nonetheless, I do think it's something that, you know, people ought to be, I think anything with these totalizing concepts like World Bank, World Economic Forum, United Nations, you know, anything that overarching, we probably ought to pay some attention to. I mean, I think some people would think it's the other way around. And, you know, I do believe that we need to pay attention to all the local, maybe the local sheriff matters more than the president in your daily life. I don't know. But I do think it's ridiculous not to be concerned what, you know, these huge multinational organizations have, you know, on their agendas. I mean, it'd be kind of foolish. I mean, it's not as if the history of humanity is driven by the people who were most always had the interest of every individual in mind. And I think that's one of the things that once people began to have more personal liberty, that, you know, they had a chance to reflect on what was best for them. And so, you know, how can we have that and still have these totalizing things trying to decide from on high? In some ways, I get it. If it's for our own good and we recognize it is, then it should be a simple, you know, thing. I mean, nobody has to talk humans into drinking good water. I mean, we all kind of get that. You know, so I know maybe it's too simplistic to say we could be there on something as complex as pollution. But I do think that there's, you know, there probably is stuff that we could agree on. So I don't know. I probably digress too far on this, but yeah, we know that they're looking to do more than, you know, simply have a curb in pollution, I would imagine, based on just the whole structure we see behind it. There's going to be a whole new bureaucracy behind it. There's going to be
absolutely
all of that.
Yeah, and it's just the same.
How are they going to do it in our lives?
It's the same old United Nations, World Economic Forum, technocratic kind of like elite, us at the top, central planning. We know how to take care of the planet. We know what's best for you. But yeah, and the interesting thing is I posted about this on my Facebook. I tweeted about it. I didn't see the mayor tweet anything from this event. I didn't see, you know, any like live stream or video. So I'm guessing it's the kind of thing that unless you're not, you know, unless you're there, we're just not going to hear about it.
That's kind of flip, right? Because look about it this way. You know how we talk about like they don't show the good, they don't show the bad things they're doing quite often, you know? So why wouldn't they be talking about this? Wouldn't this be ideally a good thing? Isn't that at least how it's being pitched? Or is there just already so much backlash that they figure, oh, it's best just to, you know, make our plans and move forward. We have the people we need. We don't need to pitch it to anybody else. You know, I don't know. It seems like if it's, you know, so good that it'd be like, look, we just took part in this. He'd be tweeting it out, you know, making the world safe for icebergs.
Well, I want to go a little further because you were sort of touching on this, and I want to about like just, you know, these organizations, these are huge multinational, NGOs and nonprofits. In the case of the World Economic Forum, they call themselves the International Organization for Public-Private Partnerships and Cooperation. So, you know, what we're seeing here is World Economic Forum Initiative. You know, the World Economic Forum has been around for 50 plus years now. They meet every year in Switzerland, Davos, Switzerland, in January. They have created over 200 plus different initiatives and platforms and other, you know, things like this, programs that allow them to get connected and kind of, in their own words, penetrate the cabinets of global governments. And, you know, I think this thing here, this, what they're calling, what do they call it? The Transitioning Industrial Clusters Towards Net Zero Initiative, is just another one of those examples. And the fact that the mayor of Houston is speaking there, I think is emblematic of that's how they bring the agenda from the top down of, you know, people are like, oh, it's just a bunch of rich people getting together and talking, right? They're not in government. They have no power, but they bring business leaders, government, journalists, et cetera. And it's becoming more and more of a public thing where the programs they are launching, the things they are saying, that language, you know, we saw that with Joe Biden, that Build Back Better terminology comes directly from the World Economic Forum and their Great Reset program. So I just wanted to show a couple other things here before we move on, in line with what I was just discussing there. So again, they have the bigger agenda that meets at Davos, World Economic Forum in Switzerland, and they have a bunch of different programs that they use to bring these agendas down to the local level. And I just released this new article today. You can find it at thelastamericanvagabond.com. It's called The WEF's Programs for Infiltration, The Young Global Leaders, Global Shapers, and New Champions. And I'm not going to read this article. It's pretty long, but I encourage you to go check it out, if only just to know who these groups are, how they relate to the World Economic Forum. I'll give you a quick summary. These are what I was just describing. These are organizations that have a public face, the Young Global Leaders, which they describe as a, quote, dynamic community of exceptional people with the vision, courage, and influence to drive change in the world. They have more than 1,400 members from more than 120 nations who are business innovators, entrepreneurs, tech pioneers, educators, activists, artists, journalists. And they basically, again, this is one of the ways they spread their philosophies and their agendas. And we have a clip here. Some of you might have seen it. There was a clip that has been making the rounds over the last year of Klaus Schwab, the head of the World Economic Forum, giving this discussion where he basically comes out and straight up says like that his Young Global Leaders program that Justin Trudeau, he even says Putin, and a few other well-known people who are now prime ministers or presidents or premiers or in positions of power come from the Young Global Leaders program. And he said, we've been penetrating the governments. That was his words, not mine, you know, talking about penetrating the governments with their organizations. And so, yeah, that's his words. And so I go into some of the, they recently actually met at the beginning of September. The Young Global Leaders had their annual gathering and for a 2-day gathering in Geneva, Switzerland. And then right around that time, or maybe even at the same time, another organization called the Global Shapers, which is just another one of these programs, which is, you know, one of them is aimed at people under 30. The other one's aimed at under 40. And just they bring them together, get them together, have, you know, they get them with probably really, I imagine, bright people who want to do good and who either are, you know, told that the UN, the World Economic Forum, these are the best paths to get a good resume so you can go out there and do good in the world and nonprofit sector, civil society, philanthropy, whatever you want to choose. And, you know, people, there's a lot of people who just don't question that. So what this article does is just, I went to the recordings. I had to actually pay for a membership for the World Economic Forum to get access to these videos because they're not public, but I knew they were meeting in September. They didn't release anything out of it. And I wanted to, you know, see what they were talking about. So I watched hours and hours of these people talking. And some of it, again, things that maybe people like you and I, Micah, might think like, oh, that sounds like a good idea, but it's all about how it's implemented, right? Is it going to be done voluntarily, consensually through the people, or some sort of forced down, top down program where through the programs like the World Economic Forum, the Young Global Leaders, et cetera, they push out their propaganda, their message, and then using all their network, you know, it becomes a reality. I mean, these are things we've been talking about for years, but I think at this point it's just so open now and we have so much documentation of it. In fact, one point I want to mention is that Johnny Vedmore, who writes over with Whitney Webb at unlimitedhangout.com.
You think it could be like a self-fulfilling prophecy to check this stuff out. These guys, you know, they're the best. They're trained up. They're like, you know, they're the elite. They're being packaged better. They're being sold. They're being told, look, this is, you know, they've got all these good things in mind for you. Look, isn't Justin a great guy? But I mean, as long as you're not a trucker or whatever up there, you probably don't have problems. Well, wait, that's not entirely true. But yeah, so
let me make this point right here. What I was saying is that Johnny Vedmore had written that this whole thing, though, for people who don't know, Klaus Schwab's mentor was Henry Kissinger. He's the one who helped him. And they did a really great investigation showing that the program that predated Klaus Schwab forming the World Economic Forum, which was originally the European Forum, I think, but even prior to that, it came from people deeply connected to the CIA working with Henry Kissinger to start this program that eventually became adopted as the World Economic Forum. And Klaus Schwab has specifically said that Henry Kissinger was his, you know, his greatest mentor. So just to kind of bring some of those connections together, sorry, Mike, I just wanted to make that point clear there.
That's important, especially, you know, I'm sure there's some alternate timeline somewhere where Henry Kissinger adopted him.
Yeah, he seems to be playing up the role of like the latest Bond villain now in power, right? And this article, like I said, it's pretty long. I'm not going to go through the whole thing and really, you know, spend time. But like I said, it's basically a summary of the Young Global Leaders Gathering in September, the Global Shapers Gathering, and then this other organization that they have called the New Champions that met over the summer. And a lot of the topics are things that I think we should be paying attention to. We were just talking about, Micah, with the carbon thing. Like they had panels talking about ESG, the environmental social governance criteria, which is quickly evolving to be one of the models or the templates for the carbon credit program, for social credit programs.
Exactly. And how they're going to police these ideas, you know, because that's what all these ideas mean. Because they, it's like you said, do they just come from the individuals deciding not to, you know, paint their walls with DDT anymore, or does it come from, you know, on high being forced? Because there's going to be unintended consequences of the legislation, of the actions, of the bureaucracies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing about it that I think is most interesting, and honestly, these people they've been working for 50 plus years, and I mean, obviously, I think much longer than that. Specifically, the World Economic Forum, though. And their strategies are working, though, man. I mean, after 50 years, he can say, look, we've penetrated the cabinets of Canada. We've penetrated the cabinets of this country. I mean, clearly their strategy of having these different programs and initiatives has worked. One other point I want to make just here, kind of tie some other things together people might know about, the organization called the Club of Rome, which just recently this year celebrated 50 years of their quote-unquote landmark report, The Limits to Growth. And The Limits to Growth talked about things like, you know, one-child policy. It talked about, you know, claiming that we were going to be hitting mass overpopulation and the planet, you know, just different things, right? Basically arguing that we need to have limited growth and control and, again, central planning. Just some interesting facts about that. And this is things I didn't know when I researched this, that the World Economic Forum actually hosted the Club of Rome in 1972 and promoted, and it's seen as really the kind of kickoff, or at least for them, of the modern environmental movement, where they were able to support and release. And Klaus Schwab, even at some of these talks I listened to, bragged about like being able to help kick the Club of Rome off, and now they've done all these amazing things by promoting their ideas for 50 years. And The Club of Rome is also infamous for, they wrote a report in 1991 as well called The First Global Revolution, where they were, they in one passage, I mean, they say it's misunderstood, but it says that we came to the conclusion that humanity itself was the enemy, and by promoting this idea, we would be able to, they would be able to advance their goals, their environmental and political goals. But beyond that, people know the name Prince Bernhard of Netherlands. He's not alive anymore, I believe, but this guy was involved in founding of the Bilderberg Group in 1954. He also played a role in the Club of Rome. And then apparently at that same year in the 70s, the World Economic Forum unveiled what they called the Davos Manifesto. And this is where the Klaus Schwab's idea of stakeholder capitalism was first unveiled. And they called this the, quote, Junior Bilderberger Annual Summit in the beginning. So just to kind of like make it clear, like there's just so many different connections between people that many of us, I think, are already skeptical of, people in power. And this is how they bring, it's not just like always nefarious, like people might imagine. It's a bunch of groups and people getting together. And I think a bunch of, you know, I don't like the term really, but useful idiots, you know, willing people, but people who are maybe acting and part of things that they're not fully like coherent of the bigger purpose. Because again, like this one here, Micah, the Global Shapers Community, this is 15,000 people in 500 city-based hubs in more than 150 countries. So they start these hubs for people under 30. And most of them, from what I learned, are just like 20 people. I mean, imagine this. It's like activist groups we know, right? But they're using their money and their funding and their resources
to create
these hubs all around the world.
Like Model UN, like these people that do well in there, you know, and make it as if it's just part of their reward. And they're just the little minion level ones, right? They're not obviously Trudeau. But yeah, I think that there's almost a seamless promotion of government within government organizations, like the school. So like the ideas that government solved all the problems in history, the ideas that these this march forward, you know, the great future that's seen from, you know, I guess you could, I don't even want to call them the elite because they're not really like particularly the best among humanity. But seen by the, you know, those who take the totalizing view and believe everyone needs to get in line with their view, those people and those organizations, you know, they seem to be able to get a foothold in early, right? Because, you know, here they are, like their professed things are all good, right? We want to save the planet, save all these things, make the world a better place, take on, you know, global issues. And so young people are attracted to changing the world, right? And so I just think that when you couple, you know, the insidious nature of government to promote government, whether it's our own schools having Model UN in it or not, but, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to be that parent that says, hey, look at this crazy stuff that's happening here? And, you know, your kid's going to be like, stop it, Dad. We don't really want you to
stop going to the school board meeting, Dad. Yeah, no, I think it is hard to come out against that sort of thing. But honestly, it's like, you know, I've told you before, I'm toying with the idea of running for mayor again next year. And if I decide to do, I would like to speak very directly to the Agenda 2030. Yes, it'll get me labeled a right wing extremist just for even, you know, dare challenging that maybe the UN's not a good thing. But I think at this point, there's so many people now who recognize that for whatever good certain people might be doing within the UN or believe they're doing, because again, not every single person involved in the UN is some kind of criminal, right? But for whatever good that's doing, I think more and more people are becoming questioning of that. And I just want to read this one line from the article here that I wrote. And again, this will be linked at thehoustonfreethinkers.com because it's exactly about what you're talking about. I wrote, unfortunately, the good work of these well-intentioned people, and I mean the average person from around the world, is being harvested in an attempt to give the WEF and their ilk a veneer of legitimacy. These projects give the WEF something to point to when asked what exactly their organization is accomplishing. However, when looking at the 2022 Global Shapers Annual Gathering, all of the topics discussed align perfectly with the aforementioned agendas of Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum. So again, they have these hubs. And I looked at, actually, there's a hub in the city I live in, Micah, here in Mexico, in Morelia. And I'm going to try to connect with them because they seem like they're probably like good, you know, like I said, well-meaning younger people in their 20s or 30s who are trying to do something good. And they have kind of going down that, what I would consider the nonprofit industrial complex, NGO, you know, that whole apparatus.
Well, one thing I would also like to say is, and maybe it's been 100 years now or so, maybe a little bit less. I think more and more people think on a global scale, even period, right? I mean, look at musicians, you know, they're being played in Spotify all over Europe, all over the Americas, you know, in Australia and Africa, basically along language lines. You know, look at the YouTube views, you know, you see views in countries that don't even speak English as a minority language. So I don't know. I think that there's something to the whole, like, we can think as a world now, or think of the world now, and be less bound by, you know, perhaps corrupt nation states. But I think, you know, when you just trade one level of government, like we've said before, you can have tyranny on the local or on the global or on federal level, you know. You can also have well-meaning people there. But I think once one of those, you know, is there a temporary government program that goes away? I mean, I just think that they tend to turn into these big bureaucracies that, if we take the show this way, you know, every episode we could cover the corruption within it and someone in an authority position using it for personal exploitation over another individual or multiple other individuals. And so I guess is it that we just have to accept some poison with this as the cure?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if the poison is the cure, if it's just the poison at this point, right? I want to wrap up this section here. I appreciate you guys being with us, and Micah, your comments, I appreciate them as well. I'll end it with this final note. And again, this whole section of articles about what's going on in Houston, my article about the World Economic Forum, and then this one, just to kind of hammer the point home, this is coming from Unlimited Hangout as well, Matthew Arrett. He wrote this one back in March. The Rhodes Scholars Guiding Biden's Presidency. And he goes through showing how, you know, again, we've learned a lot about the World Economic Forum's Young Global Leader Program, but the program that originated that sort of strategy that I was just outlining with the World Economic Forum, Global Shapers, Young Global Leaders, New Champions, it originated with the Rhodes Scholars. And if you look through Biden's cabinet, it's filled with these folks, same kind of college backgrounds and same communities. And so there's just this one line I want to read here. This is just in the introduction to the article. It says, just as Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum was never his own man, having been trained by his mentors, Maurice Strong, who is a co-founder of the World Economic Forum and also heavily involved in the United Nations, and his Harvard mentor, Henry Kissinger, so too were Klaus's young leaders merely a modern version of an older practice that has been at play for over 114 years. This older institution is the Rhodes Scholarship System and the associated Roundtable Movement, which created both Chatham House in 1992 and the Council on Foreign Relations in 1921. So that goes into a whole other topic that I know some of our listeners are familiar with and others are probably not. But if you've never heard that term, Roundtable Movement, I encourage, you know, read this article, but also just start doing some research in that area, because that's essentially what we're seeing with the World Economic Forum itself, like having a front purpose. You know, the front group has a purpose, a stated aim and goal, and maybe others in different layers have different missions involved.
A piece of that article was talking about that they have the zeal of like a religious individual, you know, convert. And I think maybe that's some of it too. They become, and we've seen this, like ideological zealots to some degree, believing the ends justify the means, which we've seen, you know, just recently we even saw Fauci using that argument, you know, that the ends justify the means. Something to keep in mind. That's an argument of tyrants over and over and over, right? The ends justify the means.
It is. Argument of tyrants. I like that. Well, but let's go to a quick music break. Come back. I know, Micah, you got some awesome stories. Our friend Ben Bernanke is apparently getting prizes and things like that, you know, for rewarded for all his hard work. And so we're going to get into that and more. We also, have you heard of geofencing warrants? I knew I'd heard of the technology, didn't know what it was called exactly, but some positive news on that front we'll get into and more as well. I'm going to play one of my songs. This song is called 33 is Here / Rising. And this one is a song I released a couple months ago, but it will be included on my upcoming debut, Transmutation, which is being mixed right now and hopefully will be out by Thanksgiving, December at the latest, January at the absolute latest. But we're working hard on that. So stay tuned. You're listening to Live Free, Think Free. We'll be right back. There's something new for you.
next, cause I'm here right now. Verse 3 is here. I'm never gonna stop, man, I'ma keep rising. I'm too strong to kill, I'ma keep fighting. I live every day like it's gonna be my last, and I keep on rising cause I'm better than my past. I'm never gonna stop, man, I'ma keep rising. I'm too strong to kill, yo, I'ma keep fighting. I live every day like it's gonna be my last, and I keep on rising cause I'm better than my past. I'm better than my past and I'm never going back. Back to the place where it all went black. I lost myself for a minute, now I see the truth in me and it's hard to believe. It felt like time is just slipping away, like I'm stuck in a loop, same shit every day. There's better days ahead, I can feel it in my bones. I need to find a way out and stop selling stones. Someone told me that we choose the life we live. Our souls knew the path before we're even kids. I wonder why my soul took the hard road. Of all the paths to choose, I chose the unknown. But I wouldn't take it back, man, I'm never going back. I'm loving my life, no secrets to unwrap. I broke free of my scars and prison bars. I'll say it again, man, I'm aiming for the stars. I'm never gonna stop, man, I'ma keep rising. I'm too strong to kill, I'ma keep fighting. I live every day like it's gonna be my last, and I keep on rising cause I'm better than my past. I'm never gonna stop, man, I'ma keep rising. I'm too strong to kill, yo, I'ma keep fighting. I live every day like it's gonna be my last, and I keep on rising cause I'm better than my past. What's left to do when you can manifest anything? There's nothing I can't overcome, it's my dream. I found the power deep in my own struggle. Was hiding from myself, living a double life. Got no time for death, I stared her down. Ate the pills, slit the wrist, even tried to drown. There's nothing you can say to hold me back. Say it now, 33 is here and I'm on the attack. I ain't no great white, but I'm out for blood. The sense in the air, the criminals up to no good. I'm coming for the ones who think they own the people. They work to mold the minds, tend to their sheeple. But we're the realization of the greatest vision. It's time for us to change the world, let it begin. This is our time to design with our hearts. We're creating the world of the future, and I'm doing my part. I'm never gonna stop, man, I'ma keep rising. I'm too strong to kill, I'ma keep fighting. I live every day like it's gonna be my last, and I keep on rising cause I'm better than my past. I'm never gonna stop, man, I'ma keep rising. I'm too strong to kill, yo, I'ma keep fighting. I live every day like it's gonna be my last, and I keep on rising cause I'm better than my past. I'm never gonna stop. Strong to kill, like it's gonna be my last, and I keep on rising, cause I'm better than my past. 33, out.
All right. Welcome back to Live Free, Think Free. That was my song. I go by the name 33. That was called 33 is Here / Rising. Appreciate it, everybody. You can find that on most social media, whether it's Spotify, SoundCloud, etc. YouTube, just search 33 is Here and you'll find it. I'll be launching a website soon. So let's get back into it. We're going to cover a few more stories tonight as we got some solutions too. I saw you put a solution there, Micah. One of the stories I got is a little positive, so we're going to talk about that. One solution I want to mention, I mentioned it last week because we were just talking about the World Economic Forum, the Great Reset, and all that scary stuff. I want to mention again that I'm a part of an event called the Greater Reset, and we're having our fourth event this January, the Greater Reset for Co-Creation. And if you are in the United States, you can go to Texas. We're going to be doing a live event in Texas and a live event in Mexico, wherever location you want to go to. January 18th to the 22nd, we have live speakers in Texas, live speakers in Mexico, simultaneous event, two places, and for free online. And we're meeting at literally the same exact time that the World Economic Forum is giving their talks and their presentations. And just like they, talk, they have different themes of technology and different areas. We also have different themes that we'd like to focus on over the 5 days. I'll just highlight those to you real quick if I can. The first one we call Liberate Your Mind, Body, and Soul, talking about mental, physical, spiritual health. Day two, permaculture, food independence, growing food. Day three, agorism and parallel networks. So that's ideas on how we can build new systems, education systems, financial systems, etc. Day four, take back our tech. So that's all about decentralized, open source technology. And then the final day, building free and conscious communities. So you'll have people presenting on communities that they're already living in or that they're building, or just people offering tips on how to organize, how to communicate, etc. And I do want to mention that if anybody is interested, we have you know, the tickets, obviously you can register and get them on the website, but there's early bird pricing going on till Sunday at midnight for both events. And you can go at the website, thegreaterreset.org, check out the details for both events. Each event has a different price, different things going on, but you will get the same experience. So if you come to Texas, there'll be a live presentation. So you'll have speakers in person, and the ones that are streaming from Mexico will be streamed to you and vice versa. And we're really excited. It's growing. I didn't even mention any of the speakers, but there's people like Del Bigtree, a lot of people know him, Sayer G with Green Med Info, Unite.live. Those are part of the Disinfo Dozen, actually. Jack Spirko, the Survival Podcast, Tom Woods, Catherine Austin Fitz, Christian Westbrook of Ice Age Farmer, a lot of other great people in person and online. So just wanted to mention that in the solutions category. You know, so if you're concerned about the other stuff going on, there are some positive efforts to combat it.
I saw an MD go by.
Yeah, there's this guy, Ken Berry, MD. I don't know his work, but John got him. He apparently does a lot of good health-related stuff, Ken Berry. But yeah, people can check out the whole speaker list at thegreaterreset.org.
Nice, nice. Well, it is, you know, it is good to be able to bring events like this to people, because often, you know, with the way the algorithm works, people don't discover these things. Even people that perhaps follow those speakers may not even know about the opportunity to attend it in two locations. And I guess the other thing is, will there be videos from it that's available to watch for people who go? Will they be able to
Great watch question. That? Great question, Micah. So actually, so this is our fourth event, like I mentioned, and we have, what we do is we stream it for free online. So if you can't come in Texas or Mexico, or you don't want to, just sit at home, comfortable if you like, organize a watch party. We encourage people to do that. And it's been cool. People in all parts of the world, they'll like send in pictures of their community at a community center. They rented out hosting, you know, watching either the whole event or some of the days. But yeah, so we do record all the talks. And on the website right now, thegreaterreset.org, you'll go see a section that says replays. And there's more than 100 hours of free content. That's all solutions focused, because I don't know if I mentioned this, but this isn't an event focused on debating politics or viruses or, you know, whatever religion or whatever you may have. It's explicitly speakers on solutions focused in each of those themes. So all the previous three events are there. You can go under the replays tab, search by speaker, like say Foster Gamble or Thrive. You want to see the past talks he's given. You can click that, or you can click by event. You can search by category. We've made it super easy. But yeah, just like that, the event, the content from the upcoming event will get posted there as well.
Well, that sounds pretty cool, knowing that there's all that content there. Even if you don't make it, that might be fun to explore if you have questions about any of those subjects. But yeah, I guess we got to talk about less thrilling things than that, huh, Derek? I mean, look at that. Biden's executive order.
99.
You know, that's wow. You know, executive orders, I think that's a phrase that's been on this show as long as this show's been around, and we're still puzzled by them. But I think I brought this mostly to the fact that, one, he's got 99, this one study that did the drawing of it to how much it cost taxpayers. Well, I think that's kind of a little bit of an erroneous study for multiple reasons. But nonetheless, I guess there's a way to see that it does cost taxpayers, even if that's a bit obscure. But I did think that one aspect of the story, besides the sheer number of executive orders, was that they were telling the U.S. Army suggested that soldiers start taking a supplemental nutritional assistance program, basically food stamps. And I'm just like, oh, wow, that's like, you know how you just get these weird tidbits in the middle of a story? But yeah, in less than 2 years since taking office, Biden has issued 99 executive orders. So I thought, you know, it's good to keep track of them numbers. I doubt he knows what they were. I mean, is that wrong to say? They try to include things. They also talk about how the executive orders could impact inflation by steering the executive branch in ways that basically promote a welfare state and people being paid to stay out of the workforce. And so they say that's an exasperating, you know, an already 3.3 million worker shortage in the economy. But yeah, so I think the main point, you know, in this, like I said already, is the number. They're also saying that some of the executive orders could impact inflation in the ways that it steers the executive branch, like if the soldiers happen to go get food stamps. I think it's bad enough being in the Army. Now you got to get SNAP, you know.
And wow.
I, like, as if you're not already being a soldier, but nonetheless.
Is it, was that a package of executive orders? Are they all related or what? Like what, why, what? I missed, you know, obviously I just missed that whole story. So excuse me if you're repeating yourself.
Go into enough detail about what each order is. And it does just, it's more of a general, I guess, Biden bashing article a little bit, like, you know, trying to say that he's caught so much with these executive orders. I think part of it was also the student loan forgiveness and just this different stuff. But I think, you know, it's just that's where we're at now, where executive orders are influencing probably more amounts of finance and policy in ways that Congress never, ever even imagined, that people who, you know, maybe even 50 years ago wouldn't have imagined. So, yeah, and it seems like they're just starting to have more and more executive orders with each president. And then, you know, it's a tangled web. We've looked into this where they supersede, you know, previous executive orders. And it's, you think the law's bad. Whew. And I guess technically they're only supposed to, you know, be orders for how the executive branch behaves. But somehow they have their way of creeping into policy.
Yeah, they do. Well, you're listening to Live Free, Think Free here. And whether you are left wing, right wing, Republican, Democrat, I don't think we probably have too many of those on here. But I know we get all kinds of listeners sometimes, maybe no wing, right? And whatever you may or may not be, we welcome you here. This is a show that from the beginning has been about promoting critical thinking, conversation, you know, discussion, maybe a little friendly debate here and there. But ultimately, we're just trying to explore ideas. We have our opinions and our views. We try to look at the news honestly and bring you guys stories that we think are important. And we're always thankful to anybody who suggests stories to us, suggests songs, and things like that. Just wanted to make that clear as we move forward now to some ongoing. I mean, I think it's every single week, Michael, we're talking about another censorship case or another censorship situation. So let's talk about this latest one here.
Oh, no doubt. You know, and I thought that was, you know, obviously a lot of people are giving, you know, Florida some difficulty. I mean, they did just get hit by a hurricane, y'all, though, you know, because they weren't a complete lockdown state and all that sort of stuff. But it turns out that the Surgeon General Joe Lodapo was promoting an analysis claiming a high incidence of cardiac-related deaths among men who took the mRNA COVID-19 vaccine. And we've heard about this from other people as well. And this doctor, who's the Surgeon General of Florida, posted a tweet Friday, which recommended that men aged 18 to 39 should not receive the mRNA vaccine. That's according to Surgeon General of Florida. And he's been an outspoken skeptic of COVID-19 vaccines. He's questioned both the effectiveness and the safety of the vaccine, despite, you know, and this is how they say it, despite consensus within the medical community. Is he not a member of the medical community now? Were those other doctors not members of the medical community? Did they not go to medical school? And okay, you get the point. But yeah, so they argue that it had consensus in protecting people against the virus and can lessen, you know, be a symptom mitigator. But yeah, it turns out that Billy Griffin, the governor's press secretary, said this is an unacceptable and Orwellian move for narrative over fact, after Twitter basically took the tweet down. And in a follow-up tweet later, Sunday after the Twitter restored the post, the press secretary thanked people for bringing attention to it. So what do you think? It would have just disappeared forever and nobody would have known about it? Or do you think maybe people saying something brought attention to it? Twitter had to say, oh, wait, there was not misinformation in here, and put it back on. So I guess it's got the Twitter seal of approval, so it must be okay, right? DeSantis has consistently rejected COVID-19 rules that mandate showing proof of vaccination, papers, please, masking students in schools, you know, where they, like, depend on facial expressions to learn socialization, and vaccine requirements for large businesses. So, yep, so they took it down, but they had to put it back.
Wow. I think, Micah, to your question, I think absolutely people speaking up and sharing those kinds of things, it still does have an impact. You know, people underestimate, I think, sometimes the impact we can have. Does that mean, like, you know, the whole narrative is falling apart and everything's, you know, the day has been saved? No, not necessarily. But the fact that somebody can get censored and enough people can make noise, and then a company as big as Twitter can be kind of forced to essentially capitulate and realize and recognize that, okay, we went too far on this one. It's worth noting. And also I'll just add to that, just as another example, you might've seen earlier this week, Micah, where there was announcement about PayPal changing their terms of service, where it explicitly said that if you were caught spreading quote unquote COVID misinformation, that they were going to deduct $2,500 from your accounts. I think it was specifically for businesses, but who knows where else it would have gone. And, you know, that started getting a lot of attention, mainly in right, you know, quote unquote, right wing media. And within, I think, 2 days, PayPal put out a statement and saying like, oh, that was a mistake. That wasn't supposed to be in there, which is just silly. And for a while, even after that statement, it was still in their terms of service. You could go find it. I guess it's gone by now, but just another example that from one day to the next, there's like, okay, kind of quietly announced updated terms of service. People catch on, people make noise, and they're like, oops, that wasn't supposed to be in there. Somebody made a mistake and just inserted this whole category of punishment with, you know, that, but somebody wrote it, right? So I do think our voices can matter in that sense.
Yeah, perhaps if nobody said anything about that, you'd have a private company basically suing people for, or not suing, just claiming assets of individuals for what they say. I mean, what if you sold a book on eBay that someone else wrote because you didn't want it and you never read it and it had some misinformation, legitimate misinformation, not just stuff they don't approve of? Would that be like, say they had a typo in there, 2 + 2 = 5? Or say they just didn't understand what the book was about. Would you all of a sudden, for selling this $3 paperback from, oh my God, the 1960s or something, with misinformation about God knows what from then, right? You could be fined $2,500, not even by your government, but by a private corporation. Lovely. But somehow that's a right-wing
problem. It's really nuts, man. It's really nuts. Well, we got a few more stories here. A couple more minutes. We're going to play another song to close out tonight. We appreciate everybody listening wherever you're at. If you are on Rockfin, Odyssey, shout out to you guys. Thank you for supporting us off of Facebook. If you're on Facebook, we appreciate you still tuning in. Get us some likes, hearts, whatever you got. You know, I think each platform has a different thing, a flame, a heart, a smile, whatever you got, we'll take it. And we appreciate the support, guys. You can always find our stories at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. I got one more to add before we get to our buddy Ben Bernanke. This is what I mentioned a couple moments ago about the geofencing warrants. Have you heard of that term, Micah? I mean, I'm sure you're going to be familiar with what it is, but have you heard that term?
No.
I hadn't heard either. About this. So this is coming from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. First court in California suppresses evidence from overbroad geofence warrant. So what the heck does that mean? Let's get into it. A California trial court has held that a geofence warrant issued to the San Francisco Police Department violated the Fourth Amendment and California's electronic communications privacy law. The court suppressed evidence that stemmed from the warrant, which means that they would not allow evidence that was found using this warrant, becoming the first court in California to do so. The EFF had filed an amicus brief early on in the case, arguing that geofence warrants are unconstitutional. The case is People versus Dawes and involved a 2018 burglary in a residential neighborhood. Private surveillance cameras recorded the burglary, but the suspects were difficult to identify from the footage, and the police didn't have a suspect, so they turned to a surveillance tool called a geofence warrant. Unlike traditional warrants for electronic records, a geofence warrant doesn't start with a suspect or even an account. Instead, police request data on every device in a given geographic area during a designated time period, regardless of whether the device owner has any link at all to the crime under investigation. Google has said that for each warrant, it must search its entire database of users' location history information. Geofence warrants are problematic because they allow police access to individual sensitive location data that can reveal private information about personal lives, like where you go, who you date, what church you go to, where you work, you know, all those kinds of things, what your favorite late night snack is. Police have also used geofence warrants during public protests, threatening protesters' free speech rights. So it goes deeper into this, you know, about like how Google is saying they're trying to, you know, they have a 3-step process that cops have to go through to, if they submit a geofence warrant, and, you know, goes on to there. It said that this article says that expert witness that was testified during this case claimed that this precision, which Google claims, may not be true at all. Like basically they're claiming it's like super precision and to a significant degree. And like, they're not gathering all kinds of people's information. They says, quote, that it may place a device inside the geofenced area that was in fact hundreds of feet away and vice versa. This creates the possibility of both false positives and false negatives. People could be implicated for the robbery when they were nowhere near the bank, or the actual perpetrator might not show up at all in the data Google provides to police. So in the case, the court rejected the geofence warrant. The court held that the defendant had a reasonable expectation of privacy in his locational data under the act, and that the warrant did not satisfy the probable cause and particularity requirements of the Fourth Amendment. Although the court found the time period requested by the San Francisco Police Department, 2.5 hours, was reasonable given the evidence, it held that the warrant was overbroad because of the size of the designated geographic area, which covered the burgled home and the entire street traveled by the suspect. They said this was too large. And this court said, quote, this deficiency in the warrant is critical because the geofence intruded upon a residential neighborhood and included within the geofence innocent people's 13 homes who were not suspected to have any involvement in the burglary, either as suspect, victim, or witness. So, yeah. And they also said it violated the Fourth Amendment because the cops have to come back for a new warrant at each step of the process instead of giving them just this like blanket, like, yeah, go ahead, do whatever you want and let us know when you're done. And yeah, so that's the first court striking down a geofence warrant happening in California.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting that they even, you know, we have an easy three-step process, blah, blah, blah. But it's interesting to see court strike it down because, you know, I almost think that people don't care about the Fourth Amendment anymore. You know, it's like, let's be safe. We could just get in everybody's stuff nonstop, right? But, yeah.
It reminds me – well, one thing, it reminds me of Stingray cell phone Stingray. God dang, I can't remember right now. I'd spent so much time researching them years ago, but cell site simulators, which are basically, for people who don't know, like a little briefcase type laptop type tool that cops can use to gather data from cell phones of suspects, you know, is what they claim, right? But in the same way that this geofence warrant they were just talking about, like it's not like something in the, at least, you know, maybe they have tools, but this particular tool isn't like synchronized just to your phone. It just basically, hey, we know Micah's in this Kroger and we need to get some of his data from his phone. Let's just, you know, use the whole Stingray on the whole grocery store, the whole parking lot, right? So they gather and scoop up all kinds of information in pursuit of this one person in the same way that they were just describing. And so there's courts have spoke against it and struck rulings down in that same way. So maybe that will be, maybe there'll be more of those things coming, hopefully. All right. But yeah, let's get into Ben Bernanke.
It might be your phone.
Yeah, exactly, right? There's, I mean, at this point they have so many tools, so many ways that that they're coming after people. But let's go ahead and get into this one. Is about our buddy Ben Bernanke. And yeah, for those who don't know, tell people who he is in case they forgot about old Ben Bernanke.
Oh, Ben Bernanke. We're going to talk about him for sure. He was former chairman of the Federal Reserve during like the TARP bailout crisis in 08 and other times. But he's the one who sat at Congress and when asked if he would tell the American people who they were, you know, which banks, foreign banks they were bailing out with the taxpayer money. And he sat there and said, nope, you know, that guy. It turns out that the Nobel Memorial Prize in Economic Sciences was awarded to Ben Bernanke. He's also the one who, you know, was able to somehow have such economic policies to alienate left and right together. And you saw, you know, the emergence of the Occupy Houston, and even prior to like the Tea Party, you know, you saw the right getting out there and being active against the banks and such. So it was an interesting time, you know. Ben Bernanke is chair. Bernanke served as chairman of the Federal Reserve from 06 to 14 and famously unleashed a tidal wave of debt monetization by the central bank during the global financial crisis over a decade ago to save the so-called too big to fail. Remember Lehman? At the time, the Fed's balance sheet was approaching $2.5 trillion. So, you know, they'd have liabilities out there, $2.5 trillion. Multiple rounds of money printing later and massive expansion during the COVID crisis, the balance sheet now stands at about $9 trillion. So, I mean, I don't know if you want to think about that. But, yeah, so – yeah, he gets a Nobel Prize. They say Bernanke's analysis of the Great Depression in the 30s showed how and why bank runs were a major reason in the crisis and why the crisis were so long and severe. Diamond and Diverge work, meanwhile, looked at the socially, they're the other two who got economic Nobel Prizes, looked at the socially important role banks play in smoothing the potential conflict between savers wanting access to their money and economy needing savings to put into investments, and how governments can help prevent bank runs by providing deposit insurance and acting as a lender of last resort. So, yeah, they said the Nobel Committee said that their work, quote, significantly improved our understanding of the roles of banks in the economy, particularly during financial crisis, as well as how to regulate financial markets, adding their research, quote, reduces the risk of financial crisis developing into long-term depressions with severe consequences for society, which is of the greatest benefit to us all. So I guess a whole new round of people have learned to doubt the Nobel Prize, as if, you know, when drone bombing presidents got it and that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, the drone king. Don't forget about the drone king, right, getting the Nobel Peace Prize. Well, I appreciate you mentioning that. Yeah, I think those things do need to be, like, those stories need to be talked about, because it gives people, like you said, sort of, it takes away the credibility of an organization like that. It's like, this is the guy heading of the Federal Reserve contributing to, like, and I think a lot of folks have trouble with this, Micah, but like the economic woes they have right now. Well, you can go back and look at the previous heads of the Federal Reserve and the previous presidents. You know, it's like people like to think, oh, this is Biden's economy, this is Trump's economy. But there's really these like successive moves that have contributed to everything that we're dealing with now, right? It's not just like one. Obviously, the $1 trillion package is not helping, but the, you know, it was the $1 billion package before that. It was the $1 billion arms deal before that. It was the bailing out of the banks before that, you know. And so we're dealing with just this successive nonsense. And I think that really it is an upside down world where people like Assange are wasting away, and Ben Bernanke and people are getting prizes.
Well, and, you know, I think the issuing power being in the hands of, you know, a private bank and in the hands of a few people really upsets the whole economic balance, because this issuing power, it doesn't have to create value in the way that you have to write an article or do some research, or a musician has to write a song and have people hear it, or, you know, a person who builds roads has to sweat in the daytime to put a road in, or a house, or a farmer, or a sacker at the grocery, or a clerk, or any of us create value for other human beings, because that's really what we're doing. You know, we're all creating value for other human beings, and these people have the right to just hit a zero on a computer screen and then decide through their buddies in Congress where it goes. And those people get money without creating value, but they get to spend it because people value money. And in there, that is, in a nutshell, the problem. So you get, you know, this basically small group of people getting to print the gold, you know. Ta-ta! You can't even do that in a video game.
Yeah, we're living in their monopoly world. Well, I wanted to show just real quick before we close out, and I know you got one little note we'll mention on, so we can end on a positive note. But we talked about this last week, and since I just mentioned Assange, we might as well just show there was a successful human chain formed around the Buckingham Palace, and then also you can see for those on screen right here, this was a demonstration held outside of D.C., outside of the Pentagon, I believe, this past weekend. Of course, no mainstream corporate media coverage of any kind. Yeah, this was in D.C. Of anything of these hands off Assange, hashtag hands off Assange rallies. Not saying that they, you know, anybody had hopes that this was going to free Assange, but it's all about, of course, bringing the awareness there. And unfortunately, the corporate media has long ago decided that they don't care, you know. So, but I will say there were people like journalist Chris Hedges, who is a left-wing liberal, old-school liberal journalist, and others who were speaking up. And, of course, Julian Assange's wife, Stella Assange, she recently had I don't know if you've seen the clip, Mike, of this, like, sort of face-off with John Bolton, the old-school neocon statist. They had, like, a little debate on, I think, maybe Fox or CNN somewhere about Julian, and it's worth watching because she, you know, she talks some mess straight to his face, and you just can't help but appreciate it, because the guy in his little like mustache, his old school soup strainer there, is just she smacks it off with her talking points. But let's go into this last little, it's that you got here. We got some tips for gardening, because it's that time, right?
Yeah, it's that time. It's always that time. But, you know, we're in Houston, at least, we're starting to feel, I mean, I'm not trying to pretend it isn't hot, but we're starting to feel a little bit of a fall coming on. And, you know, people sometimes want to get into gardening and they don't know what to plant at what times. And, you know, I not only this article, but there's this other link here from the Texas A&M that just has a chart. And you might be able to find something like this for your area. But yeah, it just names all these plants, good plants that you could start growing in September and October. Some I like and some I don't. You'll probably be able to tell. Beets, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, carrots, cauliflower, chard, collards. Those all can be planted in this time around the Houston Gulf Coast type area, probably all the way all over the Gulf. Garlic, kale, leeks, lettuce, melon, mustard, okra.
Dang, man, you can plant everything right now. Well, if you're in Houston or in that same
okra, that one was skipping. But yeah, you can plant a lot. And peas, so spinach, just like, I don't know if you eat any of that stuff, but I know I'll eat some spinach and some of this other stuff here. I'll definitely eat some broccoli. Yeah, I'll eat some broccoli and some carrots. But yeah, they've shown that also gardening is healthy for you. You know, it's a way of engaging.
Clears the mind.
Yep. So yeah. You know, it's a small thing. We've been talking about the food crisis, the climate crisis, but you know, the plants, they kind of fight both of those. You know,
definitely never a bad time to know how to grow your own food. Guys, you've been listening to Live Free, Think Free for the last hour. We're happy that you stayed with us. We got one song to close out. We'll see you next week. As always, find us at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. The links to all the articles we covered, please find them, share them with your friends, have dialogue, have conversation, because that's the only way we're going to make through this craziness. If we wall ourselves up and decide we can't talk to people with different opinions or different ideas, we're never going to get anywhere. What do you think, Mike? Anything else?
I think, you know, that's important. The people that you can connect with to value them. There's a reason that these societies like Club of Rome and everything are able to function. And, you know, you've brought up freedom cells before, but, you know, your family is a freedom cell. The people you love is a love cell. So, you know, take care of them and help empower them and be open to them empowering you. Take care of yourself, and we'll see you again next week.
All right. Enjoy this old school jam. Peace.